Talk Radio WBOB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
1.7 billion were there for his birth. 220 countries tuned in for his first step.
Woohoo!
The world stood still for that stolen kiss. And as he grew, so did the technology. Broadcast live and unedited to an audience around the globe.
Cool, man.
Coming to you now, enclosed in the largest studio ever constructed, and along with the Great Wall of China, one of only two man-made structures visible from space. Now, it's...
I'm speaking plainly with Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville. Welcome back to I'm Speaking Plenty. I'm joined here tonight with, you just wrote here, back and forth, Dawn. That's the reason why I haven't been introducing the young lady. Your email just says, Dawn, here are some topics. So I didn't get
Dawn
her last
Graham.
Name.
Dawn Graham.
Dawn Graham.
Actually, it's Dawn Gilman.
Dawn Gilman. See, you
forgive
got...
Forgive me.
Okay. So let me back up just a little bit.
Bill's about to pop a vein.
No. I'm about to back up and bring Dawn back into my... realm of not thinking that I'm a mean and nasty ogre, but I've had 11 comments, all of which, with the exception of two, that were from ladies saying, give her a break, she doesn't understand what she's doing, is she at least 25 years old? And yes, she is at least 25 years old. So most of my listeners are conservative, very conservative, hardworking people, and I'm not trying to be mean to you. Heather said, I applaud her for announcing how much money she makes. I think that for a woman to do this at a nonprofit for that kind of money is a little high when I've been working for 8 years trying to get a secretarial job and nobody will hire me because I'm 60, you know. So that's the same, Heather. And Heather, she's a wonderful young lady. I've gotten a chance to talk with her off the air. The problem that we have in this day and time is that thousands of our Jacksonville residents – drive by the Shell station downtown every day. They drive by the homeless mission. The City Rescue Mission there on State Street.
Yep.
They drive by the methadone clinic that's just on the other side of the City Rescue Mission. They see all of the homeless hanging out on street corners. I live in the old Arlington area.
Mm-hmm.
We never had panhandlers or homeless there when I was a kid growing up, and now they're everywhere. We've got hookers walking in the streets of the old Arlington area. We have tax-paying citizens who struggle to keep their power on, struggle to keep their homes out of foreclosure, struggle to even find a job when they get to be 60 like Heather. And then we have organizations like yours that without very much checking or policing is the way it sounds to me, that someone can float for 6, 7, 8, 9 months and maybe longer if they get in the right program. And that's hard for someone out there who's working 5 days a week, sometimes maybe even 7 days a week, one or two jobs. It's hard for them to fathom, why can't I do that too? Why can't I get a free ride?
So let's talk about that in the myth of a free ride. So when we are talking about homelessness and when we're talking about someone that goes into something that we call permanent supportive housing, housing that is permanent, that you pay a minimum amount for up to 30, or you pay 30% of whatever your income is, to qualify to get into that type of housing, you have to have a diagnosed disability and you have to have been homeless for over a year. So these are people that have...
But isn't PTSD a diagnosed disability?
That can be one of the disabilities. It does fall under what is called a severe and persistent mental illness, meaning something that inhibits you from doing normal life activities, like holding a job or being able to hold a job for 40 hours a week. The people that get into those programs with the most support are the people who are most likely to die if we leave them on the streets. So since we have been making progress and driving down the rates of homelessness in Jacksonville, one of the first things that the coalition, the 40 different member agencies started working on is how do we triage people? Just like in a hospital. If I walk in first with a broken arm, but you walk in second with a heart attack, you go first. You are in danger of dying. You are more vulnerable than I am at that moment. You need more care than I do.
So what you're telling me is that your program has miraculously been able to prevent people from dying. How can I get in your program?
You would have to have burned through every bridge, have nowhere.
Can I expect to live? In the real world, I can live to be, by life expectancy, 77 and a half years is what the National Center for Disease Control is reporting now. Are you telling me that you've got people that through your program are living 150, 200, 250, 300 years?
No, I'm saying that once you're on the street for even a month or two, your estimated length of life starts going down dramatically.
And that makes it my problem. Why?
Because those people are also going to get their health care in the most expensive way. Let's say that it's someone that's on the streets. They have a severe and persistent mental illness, but they also have a chronic disease that normally is very treatable, controllable. One diabetes. Probably everyone that's listening knows someone that has diabetes. If you have diabetes, where do you keep your insulin? In the refrigerator. If you're on the streets, you don't have insulin. So suddenly you are not able to control that chronic disease. Usually it ends up being a 911 call. You aren't going to go to the hospital until it's in a crisis mode. You might end up in ICU. And like you said, if you get transported to the nearest hospital, whether it's you have Health Shands, whether it's Baptist, and they are required,
they're required to stabilize you, and then they can move you to the indigent care hospital after the possible prognosis of death has been
right
averted.
But that's still, you have health care. It's right. Still a hospital in our community that's essential for our community's well-being. And the more people that go there in a crisis, the more stress that hospital is under.
Okay. See, all of these things, if you take passion and compassion mm-hmm. out of it, you have compassion because I'm paying your salary. You have collected a profession and a career and a job that allows you to take money out of my wallet and hundreds of thousands of other people around Jacksonville and promote your career. And I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, lawyers and other people do it with wrongful death injuries and things of that nature, slip and falls. They do it all over the country. I'm just saying that what we're doing now is unsustainable. How many people do we need to keep alive in this country and in this world that are not productive members of society? You know, the animal kingdom got it right hundreds of years ago with the whole idea of survival of the fittest. If you didn't come up to speed on the African plain as a lion, you became road pizza on a desert trail somewhere.
So the fastest growing population, the homeless, is those that are children. So I would argue, yes, we should help those children and keep them alive. I don't think that, this is a tough issue. It
right.
really
and
is.
And nobody wants to see my side of it. Or let me say this. Nobody talks about my side of it. Hundreds of thousands of people think about my side of it, but they're too scared to talk about my side of it. And that is, hunger is a great motivator. I've said this for years on my show. If you're homeless and you're hungry, you're going to do one of two things. You're going to go get a day labor job, and you're going to work for $5 or $10 an hour throwing sod or raking leaves or doing something so that you can get money to go down and get yourself a Burger King.
So
but if you're the other choice of is you're going to break into somebody's house and you're going to steal from them to get money. And about the fourth or fifth time you break into somebody's house, you're going to break into somebody's house with a gun, who hopefully is a good shot, and at that point in time, it saves everything for everybody.
So the majority of people who are homeless, adults who are homeless, have jobs and work. They don't earn enough money to maintain a home.
Well, then maybe they ought to go into some type of an apartment or some type of standardized blodgett housing like we used to have in the 60s when I was a kid growing up. You know, you had things like, what's the name of it, Liberty House or wherever the apartment complex that's been
Liberty,
in the news.
Liberty Center,
Liberty
which
Center.
Is one of the affordable apartments that is within the continuum of care.
We're talking to Dawn Gilliam. We'll be right back.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
The year was 1957, and Elvis Presley had the number one hit that year, All Shook Up. And in Liverpool, England, the Cavern Club opened and featured the Beatles, which is where the Fab Five got their start. 1957 was also the year that the Boger family opened their shoe store on Park Street here in Jacksonville. Since then, Boger Shoes has been providing orthopedic and diabetic shoes for thousands of customers in Northeast Florida. Boger Shoes specializes in extra-wide width shoes, and they offer free evaluations and fittings by three board-certified podiatrists on staff. With your doctor's prescription, they can custom-make orthotics in their on-site lab. And this month, Boger Shoes is featuring the Birkenstock Giza, a proven classic with signature support and an anatomically shaped court latex footbed. Good old-fashioned customer service has been the key to Boger Shoe success since 1957. Stop by 1014 Park Street in Five Points and experience the Boger Shoes difference. Boger Shoes, the answer for hurting feet.
Dine with the doctor at Canterfield of Clay County. Enjoy a first-class meal and hear an informative presentation from joint replacement specialist Dr. Max Lincoln. When should I consider joint replacement? How long do they last? What is my expected recovery time? These questions and more will be discussed during a short Q&A after dinner. Dine with the doc, Tuesday, July 24th from 5:30 till 7 at Canterfield of Clay County. Dinner is free, but reservations are required no later than July 20th. Call 203-6100. That's 203-6100.
WBOB tackles the issues.
When I look at some of these mass shootings that have happened in the past, a lot of these teachers had to sacrifice themselves to protect their students. Well, why not put them in the best position to fight back?
Every day.
Federal district judge in California expanded the ruling to say that even accompanied children can't be held for more than 20 days. I don't see how they can unless Congress gets its act together and passes legislation.
WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Let's get back to I'm Speaking Plainly.
What you got to say?
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Say, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville. Welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. I'm your host, Bill Hay, and joining me in the studio tonight is Dawn Gilman. She is with the Changing Homelessness. And she's joining me in the studio, and we have Ashley on the phone, and she'd like to come on board and talk to you. Ashley, good evening, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Just fine.
Dawn, I just wanted to thank you because I know a lot about the program you're talking about. I'm in the supportive housing program. I was with Salzbacher, which you probably know about, being helping out people that you know. And the program I'm in, Bill, talking about, you know, they have people, they have 9 months. In my program, I get a year, but like she said, if you get a job in my program, you have to pay 30% of your rent, which is through the HUD program, which, you know, with Dawn, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a single mom with a two-year-old, and it's very frustrating to, you know, be down here, try to find a job, do it all on your own. And so, you know, I just wanted to thank you for, you know, you coming in and like explaining to Bill, you know, what actually goes on, you know, with the homeless people and stuff like that. I was at Salzbacher for a year, which was very tough. And then coming out and transitioning into a new program, which Bill, you know, they pay my electric. But I have to get a job, so I have to get my own cable.
I have to afford everything else. And like I said, I work, but I have to pay 30% of my income, which is like $200 a month.
So let me ask you something, Ashley, and I appreciate the fact that you called in today. It took a lot of nerve for you to lay your life out. But in your job, does someone check to see how much money you're making, or do you just on the honor system have to declare?
No. When I first found out I had a job, and I actually have a caseworker that meets with me once a month. It's optional. It's once a week. It varies time to time because they have a lot of caseworkers that have millions of caseloads. And so in the HUD program, if you get a job, you have within 24 hours to go down to Jacksonville and to go to the HUD program, and then explain to them that you have a job. Then you have to bring them a check stub so that they know how much money you're making. It's sort of like the honor system. Some people that, you know, lie and say that they don't have a job, keep it for like 6-9 months. And
no, really, Ashley, people wouldn't lie about that, would they?
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to convince everybody else.
And then on top of that, you know, me being a single mom, you know, I do get food stamps, I do get WIC, but they do cut it. I can tell you that they do cut it because I have a job, which, you know, I understand. You know, I'm trying to be an independent woman. Me being 26, I'm trying to do everything on my own. But, you know,
Ashley, you sound like a
penny counts.
Ashley, you sound like a wonderful young lady. Let me ask you a personal question. You can tell me to get, you know, where to get off if you wish. But is the father of your child, is his name on the birth certificate?
Yes.
Wow. So you have an out road. Does he not work?
No, he tries to get disability. We went the route as to, you know, I'll work, I'll do everything. You know, you stay home, you know, you be a parent, you be a father, I'll go out in the working field. I was raised in the family where, you know, both parents worked. My mom sometimes helped out. My mom sometimes stayed home to watch all four of us kids. So, you know, he just stayed home and be the dad.
Do you, so he's there, is he living with you?
Yes.
So do you ever get asked by the caseworker, you know, does the caseworker know that the dad lives there too?
Yes. It could be either or. Like, they know that he lives with me, but on my lease, it's my name only on my lease.
So his name was on the lease too, then you wouldn't get as much support?
No, it's like it goes off by program. Like Dawn was saying, I have PTSD. So, and it's considered my program. I'm with the supportive housing program, almost like the ability housing program, where if you have mental health, they help you out. And because I filed when figuring out this program with Salzbacher, I'm the one with the mental health. And because I have a child, they said, okay, well, you're the one with the mental health. You have PTSD. Plus, it was sort of like a process. Like when you go through Salzbacher and you go through their multiple programs, you have to qualify. There's a lot of qualifications, but which was very frustrating. You had to qualify, which either have PTSD or you had to be homeless for a consecutive 365 days. Well, because I was homeless for 4 years, I qualified for both. So then they put me up at an apartment, and not really in a great area, to be honest. It was very frustrating. And so, like I said, my name solely on the lease. They gave me a time limit as to how long I could find a job, which took me a year. And then they pretty much were like, okay, well, you know, you've waited around for a year, you know, sort of like pushing me in the butt. Okay, now it's time for you to get a job. And so I said, you know what, I will try to find a job. But they weren't like, oh, you have to find a job or you're being kicked out.
Was there,
that's
did you,
not how it is.
Did you not have any immediate family here that could help you?
Yeah, no, I don't have immediate family here. I'm from Albany, New York. So, and I moved down here because of warmer weather. And so I,
I personally chose not to put my little one in daycare. So I decided, okay, well.
But when you were homeless for 4 years, how old's the little one?
Two.
So I guess you've not been homeless for 2 years. So.
No.
Okay. All right. That's good, because I wouldn't want to see the little one living in the woods. That would
oh,
not.
God, no. Okay. I was technically homeless with her for maybe about 6 months before I found Salzbacher. I went to the city rescue mission. Come to find out they were over capacity, and they turned me away, so I had to go to Salzbacher, which was in a long run, very hard experience with them. They were over capacity as well, and I was sleeping on their dining room floor for about 6 months until I actually got a room there for about a year.
Okay, Ashley, well, it's been wonderful talking with you, and I hope everything
thank
goes
you.
Forward, and tell Ricky I said hello, and I hope he's doing well.
Okay, thank you.
And yes, it was.
No.
Yeah, we have call trace ID here at the station, so yes, it was. She didn't know it. Anyway, we'll fill you in when
okay.
we're off the air. Anyway,
right.
So I have that harkened back memories. Remember the city councilwoman that was in here, and I just let her go on and on and on, and then zinged her, and boom, she just came unglued. I'm sorry, I have my way with people.
Okay.
Anyway, so now we're talking about that nice young lady. She is right. She has to pay 30%,
mm-hmm.
but she gets the free housing for a period of time, and it sounds like they check on them
yep.
pretty regularly. But I'm sure that's not the case everywhere.
If it is federal funding, you have to check it every 30 days.
I was just going to say, Bill, I can tell you we get employment verification requests from City of Jacksonville two or three times a week on employees. What was their last pay period? How many days did they miss? What were their wages?
Right, but both of you guys are missing. That doesn't prevent them from working cash jobs on the side.
Can't do anything about that. You're absolutely right.
No, but
actually, a good case manager can do something about it because they can ask the right questions. They can get that information.
Do you find that your caseworkers are really that passionate about finding the bad in people, or do they just want to think everything is roses and daffodils?
Well, see, you're thinking that's a bad thing.
I am thinking it's a bad thing.
But what if they?
Well, here, I tell you what. Here you go, Dawn. Just take my wallet. There it is right there. Just take it all. I mean, I'm glad that I was born and raised in the time when I was raised, because we're giving our money away to people that are perfectly capable of working but have found an easy way out. It's like the exponential democratic rule. Find the loophole. Find a way. I get up at 4 a.m. I work very hard all day long, every day of the week. And some of these folks just sit around and watch TV and probably play video games that they bought off of, a pawn store somewhere for cash. And nobody's out there checking.
So we have to do with different programs, I would say there's a lot of checking going on. Is any system 100% perfect? Absolutely not. There's always a loophole for somebody somewhere that's willing to work at it. On the flip side, as a community, as a society, we have to decide who are we willing to help and how much. And those people that cannot work and are not able to take care of themselves, are we willing to help them? And sometimes we do that for our own self-interest, because we know that if they get picked up for a misdemeanor, it's $8.50 to book them, and it's $62 a night to stay in jail downtown.
Paid for by the federal government.
Or city and state government here. So.
But only a very small percentage of that. In fact, next to tourism in the state of Florida, corrections is the largest moneymaker for the state of Florida. Next to tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? Mickey Mouse and Shamu are competing with Cousin Pookie and Uncle Della, who's down in Rayford State Penitentiary right now. You're listening to I'm Speaking Plenty. I'm your host, Bill Hay. Joining me is Dawn Gilman from the Change Homelessness Organization. I'm going to get that by the time the last segment is over. Changing Homelessness. We're going to talk to her a little bit more when we get back. Phone lines are open, 222-TALK, 222-8255. Join us on the backside, won't you?
AM
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. President Trump played golf and tweeted today from one of his namesake resorts in the run-up to his high-stakes meeting with Russian President Putin on Monday. Mr. Trump is spending a private weekend at the properties in Scotland. Aides have said he would spend the time preparing to meet Putin on Monday in Helsinki. Meanwhile, the president's getting some heat for recent comments on immigration. His recent lament that immigration is changing the culture of Europe is echoing rising anti-immigrant feelings on both sides of the Atlantic, where Europe and the United States are going through transformative demographic changes. And also, the president is having Mike Pompeo fly in from his Mexican trip. Pompeo is saying that the meeting between Mr. Trump and Putin should go on despite the indictment of 12 Russians for hacking. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Internal Revenue Service. When you owe a personal or business tax debt and can't pay, just hearing those three words brings feelings of fear and anxiety. And it's only a matter of time before tax liens, wage garnishments, or bank levies happen to you. We are J. David Tax Law, a local law firm right here in Jacksonville. Your first step to resolution is our no-cost consultation. We take the time to go through your specific tax problem step by step. We explain exactly what your options are and how we will resolve your tax issue. At J. David Tax Law, only experienced tax attorneys will represent you, and our fee payment plans are affordable for everyone. If you have tax problems, call us now for a no-cost consultation at 904-507-4777. That's 904-507-4777. Or find us on the web at jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or phone call away.
Is Greystone Kitchens better than the big box stores for your new cabinets and countertops? About 1,000,000%. Hi, I'm Jeff Martin from Greystone Kitchens and Martin Appliance. We are 1,000,000% better for cabinets and countertops, and I can prove it. Better selection, styles, and options. 100% better. Any color you can imagine. 100% better. Faster turnaround and completion. 100% better. You get a hassle-free fun experience and a contractor that listens to you and brings your dreams to life. It all adds up to 1,000,000% better. For the first time ever, our quick cabinet and countertop makeover is on sale this month. We just got 2,000,000% better. Don't let a store clerk design or manage. Get Greystone Kitchens to do it, and you'll have me. I'm a licensed contractor, for crying out loud. Find us at GreystoneKitchens.com. State licensed contractor, CRC 1330991.
What you see is what you get. Martin Appliance Family.
Turn your radio on.
Have you heard? The Ted and Sandy Gospel Program can be heard every Sunday from 7 to 8 a.m. on WBOB. Ted and Sandy guarantee to play you some of the best in Southern Gospel, Bluegrass Gospel, and Country Gospel available. They'll give you words of encouragement in your daily life, announce gospel sings, and church events in our area, and much more. Tune in every Sunday morning at 7, right here on WBOB.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Right now, 7:33, I'm Tom Murphy. U.S. 17's backed up in both directions due to the crash on the 295 West Beltway southbound, approaching the Buckman Bridge, and police have all lanes shut down getting on the Buckman in that area. We'll keep you posted. Cloudy tonight, occasional heavy rain, low 76. Tomorrow and Monday, a 40% chance of showers, high 91. 80 degrees at Talk Radio WBOB.
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Say, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville. Welcome back to I'm Speaking Plain. Join me in the studio is Don Gilman from Changing Homelessness.
Very good.
Got it right. And Linda. Linda, there's been an epitome here, an epiphany here in the studio. Not really that big of a thing, but in the off-mic time, Dawn's seen a little bit of my way. I've seen a little bit of her way. But in the grand scheme of things, the system is fraught with problems. And we either maintain the system as it is now and try and filter it out, or the system, we just collapse the system altogether, and then everybody loses.
Correct.
And unfortunately, so many programs that we have in our country now, that when everybody loses, it's
everybody loses.
But do I lose as much if Cousin Pookie doesn't get his $150 worth of SNAP, or as I would if he went to a state-sponsored hospital because he wasn't getting his insulin or his nutrition like he should?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which do I lose the most money at, and that's the course I want to take? Or the least money at, and that's the course I want to take?
So let me tell you a little bit more about what my agency does. We do a very little direct service. I talked a little bit about the one program that through for veterans, we actually use other agencies that do direct service for those people. A lot of what we do is run a database for the three-county area, which is a way that we do try to figure out people flowing in and out of the system, who is getting what, as you were talking about, or has gotten what programs have people already gone through. As we were talking off air, you know, it's not a perfect system, but we do try to use the money that we have to do the best good, the most good for the entire community, both for that individual who is experiencing homelessness and for our entire community. As you're talking about your frustration with it is mainly tax dollars for a lot of the programs for people who are severely disabled. That's one of the things the federal government actually does fairly well.
Let me go to the phones real quick. Mark's
sure.
got a question for you about care, medical care for people mm-hmm. in your program. Mark, go ahead. You're on the line with Dawn.
Yeah, she was making a point earlier that the people that are homeless, they always go to the emergency room for every little cut and scrape and cold, and that's the most expensive way to get medical care. But she sort of implied that if they're living in her housing units wherever, that stops, or aren't they still going to the emergency room for every cut and scrape, or that you got a program through where they're living that they get some other vote? I didn't follow you.
No. Okay, thank you, Mark. I appreciate your call.
Yeah, Mark, that is a great question. So when I'm talking about people in these different programs, the permanent supportive housing programs, they have a diagnosed disability, but a lot of times that is a mental illness. So they have not been able to qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. If they're qualified for it, they haven't been able to go through that paperwork to be able to do it.
So you have someone that helps them fill out
the
paperwork?
We have someone that helps them go through and do it. That way, they are able to get what we call a medical home, which is a primary care doctor like most of us have. So no, they wouldn't need to go to the emergency room for every cut or scrape or cold. They now can go to, you know, instead of sitting in the emergency room for a couple hours to be seen by a doctor, if it's not a crisis, they can make an appointment like anybody else, go see their, primary care physician and get treated that way, which is, again, better for the medical system. There's kind of, I wouldn't say kind of, with the homeless system of care, we're just one piece of the puzzle. A lot of our clients are interacting with law enforcement, with that whole system that runs through there. They're also going through the medical and mental health systems of care.
How do you address the chronically homeless who, you know, on the radio programs, we mm-hmm. call them nut jobs. How do you address the guy that's never going to be a viable member of society, that may have family members out there, but they don't want to have anything to do with him because they're worried he's going to steal everything out of their house and pawn it for his next rock fix or his next, you know, fifth of Mad Dog 2020. You know, what's your solution to that? Mine is housing them in a state-sponsored hospital, but Bill Clinton put the kibosh on that. Do you have any programs to get these people off the street and get them, you know, for lack of a better word, tied to a white room with a lot of padding?
Yes and no. So when you talk about a state hospital tied to the white room, lots of padding, very controlled. Usually the people are overly medicated in those situations. They're very contained. We are not part. That is at a much higher medical level. There's still a state mental health hospital that some people do need to go to for inpatient treatment. Also, there's hospitals in town that also do inpatient treatment. When we talk about permanent supportive housing, that's putting people in housing with a lot of wraparound services, very intensive case management. Many times, about 85 to 90% of the time, once they get into housing, they realize it's their place, they get to stay, they start to stabilize on a lot of different levels, whether it is mental health issues.
How many success stories do you have where someone gets into your program, feels stable in a home, gets a job with a paycheck that's big enough to where they can get out of your home and get into an apartment? You know, do you have any requirements on residents not owning cars while they're in your homes?
Well, it depends on where you want them to be able to work. We try to get people places that are on the bus lines because a lot of people don't have cars. But it's true, once they do get employment, to get a better job, often they have to be able to drive themselves to work because they're going too far out, or they're going at odd hours where it may not be a way that they can go back and forth on JTA.
Do you put a limit on the value of the car they can have?
We do not put a limit on the value of the car.
Why not?
Because most of these people are making so little money that they're buying very inexpensive cars.
How do you know?
It's also considered an asset. Some programs you actually have to go through what a person...
See, that's I like. That I like. If a person has to list his assets and his asset is a 2017 Cadillac Escalade, sorry, you're out of my program. Sell the rims off your car and pay your rent for a year, and then you can get back into my program.
So I would say most of the people that go through the different agencies that we've talked a little bit about off the air, a lot of the big agencies in town, by the time they show up on their doorstep, they've sold off everything they own, trying to either stay in their apartment. Once they get evicted and lose their apartment, they're trying to pay for an extended stay hotel motel, staying in that. By the time the money runs out for that, they're hopeless. They're at the end of their rope. And what I'm fortunate to work with a lot of people at City Rescue Mission, at Solzbacher Ability Housing, they are giving people that hope back. And people do come out and are maintaining their own apartments. It is less likely for someone in those permanent supportive housing programs to do that because they come in with a very severe disability on the front end. In the rapid rehousing programs, about a 90% success rate. They graduate out of there and they maintain their housing for a year or two after those programs.
So here's what I need to do, Joni. I need to find a way to fake a disability, to go down to making a little bit of money, apply for one of these housing positions, and then I can hang out all day at the airport or at the beach and do nothing.
Well, Bill, I think you already have severe mental issues.
Well, yes. So the diagnosis is always the trick on those. But they are still paying. They have to pay their own utilities on most of these programs. They do have to pay
something. But if they don't, there's another program like the Downtown Ecumenical Society that'll pay their JEA bill.
Catholic Charities. Knowing Downtown Ecumenical, you can get your JEA paid there once every 18 months. Catholic Charities, Jewish Family, they do a lot of the prevention work in town also. So does...
Salvation Army does once every 18 months.
Every 18 months.
Yeah, but if you sell a half a dozen Oxys down on Main and Hubbard or 2nd Street, you could probably pay your JEA bill in a matter of a few minutes or hours.
You may be then invited to
stay
Sheriff
at the
Williams,
right.
a center downtown also.
Yeah.
So all that being said, do you do an outreach program at the jail also? Do you do a program that goes in and maybe looks at some of the reasons why people got in there? And
yes.
Whether, okay.
And
a diversion program to keep them from going back and forth through the rotating?
There are a couple different ones. And I just saw the flash. I'm happy to talk about one that is with Solzbacher and the sheriff's office. There's a small one that we help out with also. So
we're not letting you go. You got another 14 minutes here, so you're stuck here.
All right.
It turned around, and I'm glad that Linda is on board now, because Linda was saying, Bill, turn off the classic Bill and give her a little bit of a break. So, Linda, I'm doing this in honor of you. I'm turning off the classic Bill.
Thank you, Linda.
I still believe that survival of the fittest includes stalking, hunting, and killing your own food, not going into Publix on my credit card. We'll be right back.
My name is Amanda, and I am in the Life Builders Recovery Program at City Rescue Mission. I've allowed alcohol to take my career, my family, and my faith from me. I was also sexually abused and became depressed, even suicidal. It was those suicidal thoughts that became my wake-up call. I was referred to CRM by another facility that told me I needed a longer-term recovery program. A God-centered program and the counselors at CRM have given me the freedom and the willingness to open up. I no longer see myself as an alcoholic. I see myself as a child of God. I know that I am worthy of love and that I can do all things through Christ. After graduating from CRM, I want to work in the nonprofit field and be of service to others.
I'm Penny Keevitt, Executive Director for the City Rescue Mission. Would you consider helping us make a difference as we provide hope, healing, and change to those who need it most? Visit us at crmjax.org. That's crmjax.org to learn more, or to make a donation to help transform the lives of the hungry, homeless, and addicted in Northeast Florida.
Sean Robinson Realty has the ultimate real estate proposition for you. Own your own home. Sean Robinson Realty has likely sold or listed a property near you. If you close a home with Sean Robinson Realty, he'll give you a brand new big screen HD TV. Call 904-77-SEAN. That's 904-77-SHAWN. Sean Robinson Realty is your one stop for all of your real estate needs. Residential sales, commercial leases, or property management. Locally owned and operated by people who know your community. If you're looking to buy or sell a home or commercial property, don't waste your time. Call Sean Robinson Realty. Imagine getting a free big screen HD TV upon closing. Sean Robinson Realty will do it. Call 904-77-SEAN. That's 904-777-4296. 904-77-SEAN. Sean Robinson Realty.
I need new wheels, but my credit isn't great. I've been turned down before, and I really need a new car.
JaxCarLoans.com is the answer.
All the dealers I've talked to want a crazy amount down, and the monthly payment is too much.
JaxCarLoans.com is Jacksonville's oldest and best auto financing source. JaxCarLoans.com works with over 30 reputable auto lenders to get all of their customers approved. Apply online at JaxCarLoans.com. That's JaxCarLoans.com. Or call one of our credit specialists at 990-4029. JaxCarLoans.com.
This was one of the funniest things ever to see Jim Clapper out there. I mean, is he still selling that awful book he wrote? Everyone's out there hawking a book now. Now, Jim, here's all we want to know. Were there other informants inside the campaign? Were there other people that you all sent inside the campaign? Lord knows who else they sent in there. They tried to say yesterday, oh, there was no one else. How do we know that? I don't trust these people farther than I can throw them.
Laura Ingram, now weekdays 9 to 11 a.m. on AM 600 and 101.1 FM WBOB.
Let's get back to I'm Speaking Plainly.
What you got to say?
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Say, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville. Welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. Joining Joni and myself in the studio is Don Gilman from Changing Homelessness. And I'm going to go to the phone, and I know what Jay is going to ask you, but I'm going to let him ask you anyway. Jay, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, good afternoon. What I'd like to know is, are we helping the illegal aliens that are in the undocumented individuals that are in this country, or are we not? Or they have to go somewhere else other than Lutheran Social Services?
Okay, Jay, thank you for your comment. I think you addressed that a lot of what you deal with are veterans.
Right.
And in order to be veterans, they have to be citizens.
Yeah, they do have to be citizens. For any of the federal programs, you have to be in the country legally. That is something that we have to determine before you enter those programs. Now, you may be a legal resident, you know, not a full citizen or not a naturalized citizen, but you cannot be illegal.
Or undocumented.
Sometimes determining documentation, as your audience can imagine.
Oh, you had me going there for a minute. I was believing you. I was buying you. I was on your side. But now you're going to tell me that sometimes it's very difficult to verify whether Pablo and Manuel are actually legally in the United States.
Actually, it's not even Pablo and Manuel. It's someone who was born in a different county, in a different state. They have to remember where they're, what the county was they were born in, because the counties are the ones that hold your birth certificates.
Birth certificates, right.
And that determines that you are a legally born U.S. citizen. Most people that are naturalized, just like a lot of veterans, even though they may have been on the streets for a while, it is very common for a veteran to still, the one piece of paper he or she still has is their DD-214.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with anyone who realizes that that piece of paper is something they need, that may be their only possession that they really have on them by the time they come here.
How much do you background check your recipients? I guess it's easier for you because of the military chain of structure.
Military, yes, but for kind of going back to your caller's question, there are 17 standard questions that any of the 40 agencies are going to ask you. And those questions are going to include your name, your birth date, and your Social Security number. You get asked about your family status. So we're establishing that you are who you say you are before you get that assistance. Whether it's a program through the VA or through HUD or the state, we're not allowed. We have to prove that someone's not double dipping, meaning if you got paid from one agency for June, I can't also pay for those June bills. So you may get paid for other things further down the line, but you have to determine not double dipping. That's part of the value of that database that my agency helps to run and gives access to the different agencies in our community. So they can show that by putting that information in, they know that people aren't double dipping.
I want to talk a little bit about the program you were talking about with the Sheriff's Department. Before
sure.
I go into that, do you have any statistics on how many people are homeless here in Duval County?
Absolutely. Annually, we do something called a point in time count. It is the fourth Wednesday in January. It's been done in Jacksonville for years. On any given night, there are about 2,000 people who are homeless. Of those 2,000, about 200 to 300 are street homeless, meaning they're not in a shelter. They're outside in an abandoned building or in the parks under the highway overpasses.
How many of those folks do you believe that you could go up to and offer them housing a night in out of the cold, and they would completely turn it down because of trust issues? And I my show, I'll give you some background before you ever came in here. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done it recently because a lot of the homeless guys mm-hmm. put a name to a face now and they know me. But there were a couple of times, I've been doing this over 6 years now. In the beginning, I put on scruffy old jeans, a ripped up t-shirt, went downtown, didn't cut my hair for a long time, didn't shave for a few days, and pretended to be homeless down at the Greyhound bus station and along the landing. Mm-hmm. There is a whole subculture of people down there. There is a game trail between the last little pagoda at the landing and what used to be the Greyhound bus station and what became Confederate Memorial Park over near the creek there, Hogan's
yep.
Creek. There's a game trail of back alleys and places mm-hmm. that guys use as transient pathways. Many of those guys will not seek out assistance because they have outstanding warrants in other states. They have issues here in the local area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever reach out to those folks and say, we can help clear up some of the problems? You might do 6 months in jail, but at least you won't be looking over your shoulder.
Right. We try that. There's not a whole lot of people that have that skill. That is a skill, because you have to know the legal system really well to assist them on the back end. So you're giving them an honest answer. But back to your original question, how many would just turn us down? Like if I had a key to an apartment because of the trust issues?
Percentage wise?
Probably 25% or greater. They just wouldn't believe that it was real. They wouldn't trust me. They wouldn't. I mean, for the people who have been out for a very long time, even the ones who need the assistance the most, right? Those are the people that are the least likely to ask for it.
Wow. Okay.
And that's, as we started looking at this really seriously back in 2011 was the first time we really started focusing on that vulnerability of the person, that's when it kind of, at least for me, it really crystallized. The person, let me back up. In November of 2011, we did something called a registry week. Three mornings in a row, downtown, core of our downtown area, 4 to 6 a.m., interviewed about 600 people. Four people who were living on our streets, not in shelters, had cancer. I mean, as I say that, probably you and many of your callers know there's probably something somewhere out there that those people didn't have to stay on the street, yet they were. For whatever reason, they couldn't or wouldn't ask for that help.
Hmm.
Don, have you been involved in the whole homeless situation?
10 years. I got hired at the end of 2007, became the executive director in 2009.
Okay.
So that's 10 years of experience seeing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And any progress, any real progress in getting people, you're seeing the same people falling in and out of homelessness on a regular basis?
Yes and no. So since 2009, that's kind of where our benchmark is with the recession. Since 2009, overall homelessness has gone down, and this is just Northeast Florida, not the whole country, just Duval, Clay, and Nassau counties. It's gone down about 30%, which isn't great, but it's good. We've dropped that chronic population that we talked about, the people that have a disability and a long-time homeless, that's gone down close to 50%. Veteran homelessness has gone down close to 80%. And that has, there's a couple different reasons why. It is the best funded for any of the subpopulations that we call them, the different groups of people who become homeless. The veterans do have the largest number of resources. Through the Housing Authority and the VA, they have permanent supportive housing. There's the other program that's for rapid rehousing and prevention of veterans. It also allows us, like you're talking about, we go out, we have a by name list. We know every homeless veteran by name in the three county area. If they're out on the streets, we engage with them at least every 2 weeks.
Okay. Do you have, we're getting ready to wrap up this segment. I'd like to hang on to you for at least the first part of the next one.
Okay.
To talk about the sheriff's program.
Sure.
That you were working on. And, you know, at one time I talked with Sheriff Rutherford about a misdemeanor releasing facility out on the edge of Duval County near the Baker County line, building a nice place, maybe even at Cecil Commerce Center, to where folks that are picked up on the street can be taken out there, evaluated, see whether or not they're eligible for programs like yours. Most of the homeless centers and charitable organizations fought back against Sheriff Rutherford for that. I produced another program, or developed what I thought would be a good program, and that was the idea that we pay the city residents, pay, you know, let's give Clara White $1 million, and in addition to that, let's build them a building out way out West Main Street, you know, almost to the International Airport, or way out West 10 to Chafee Road area. Let's move the Salzbacher out there. Let's move the Sea to Rescue, Christ is the Answer mission out there. And we'll give them $1 million just to move. Kind of like, here's your hat, what's your hurry? And they all voted it down. I don't know how we're going to get the money and the revenue from downtown if we don't get the homeless out of downtown. We're going to talk about that when we get back. You're listening to I'm Speaking Plenty. I'm your host, Bill Hay. Phone lines are open. 222-TALK. 222-8255. Dawn Gilman joining me in the studio. She'll be back for the first part of the next segment. Join us, won't you?